I sing a song of a saint of God, patient and brave and true, who toiled and fought and lived and died for the Lord he loved and knew. This one was a priest. Courageous, indeed heroic. And he became a bishop. But no plaster saint he. In many ways he was, in most ways he was, gloriously ordinary. Okay. Gloriously ordinary. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that in that he was folk just like me. And I mean God helping to be one too. This past June, one of the great heroes of my whole life died at the age of 89. The Right Reverend Duncan Montgomery Gray, Jr., 8th Bishop of Mississippi, was a hero not just to me personally, but to the whole church, not simply to Mississippi, but to the whole church, because of the utter and absolute integrity of his witness in a crucial time in the life of our country and right in the crosshairs of it. Duncan, he became a very good friend, and I use the term, his first name, with tremendous respect. Duncan was rector of St. Peter's Episcopal Church in Oxford, Mississippi, at the time when there was tremendous civil unrest over the enrollment of James Meredith, the first African American to be enrolled at the University of Mississippi, Ole Miss. And yes, Duncan Gray brought politics into the pulpit. There's a famous photograph, but more importantly to me, there's a painting that renders that photograph that is in the Gray home that shows the riot at Ole Miss in the Grove, and the famous Greek Revival building called the Lyceum, with its great stairway up to its august doors. The photograph and the painting are very obscured by the smoke and the violence of the rioting that was taking place at the university. And up at nearly the top of the stairs of the Lyceum, you can see a figure dressed in black with just the hint of the white collar, trying to separate people who were in a fight. Later that same time, Duncan Montgomery Gray was pinned to the ground by two rioters, while another one stood over him with a tremendous piece of broken concrete raised to smash his skull. When, out of nowhere, a fellow protester, rioter, came up and said, "No, no, don't kill the preacher." In the aftermath of that, the Gray household received bomb threats. The children had to be protected in school. But Duncan Montgomery Gray Jr. persisted in his witness. Everywhere I'm going now, Sunday visits, meetings, committee things, everywhere I'm going, you and your lay people are asking me about what witness the church could make or should make in this season of the election for president. The questions arise from great anxiety and even disgust over what is happening in our election, in the campaign, with nothing, it seems, but personal vitriol, scurrilous attacks, reprisals. The issues don't even get in the doorway, it seems. It's just nothing but one attack and a response and another attack and another response. What do we do about that? Isn't there a place for the church in this kind of season and in this kind of environment? Oh no, Bishop, you're supposed to keep politics out of the pulpit. You know, the church is supposed to be about reconciliation, reconciling with God and reconciling with one another, and politics is so divisive, we can't risk it. Duncan Montgomery Gray, Jr. begged to disagree. But it didn't come out of nowhere. And it was something deeply considered and consistent over months and 20 years of episcopacy. He became something of a scandal in the state of Mississippi. He was a symbol of something that was very frightening to the institutionalized racism, segregation, voter suppression. Gosh, those things sound frighteningly familiar. And even as something of a scandal, at a time when his own father was the bishop, Duncan Montgomery Gray Sr., even at a time when he was a scandal, when it was time in years to come to elect a new bishop, the Episcopal Church in Mississippi elected him the bishop. Controversy or not, because of integrity of witness and rock solid gospel witness, the church's insistence upon being heard. Some of you have asked about making something of a witness in this season. And many times it's along the lines of asking for permission or my indulgence. If you feel you need that permission, you've got it. In fact, I want to bring you this morning some encouragement. But yes, some perspective about how we might go about doing this. There are things that I learned from Duncan and from his amazing wife, Ruthie. What a team. And from his children, one of whom was a parishioner of mine in my church in Tupelo. The other son became the 10th bishop of Mississippi, Duncan Montgomery Gray III, having been rector of St. Peter's Episcopal Church in Oxford. And I'd like to share something of that with you now. There are ways to think this through, to be patient and brave and true. One is, it's very important to be discerning. Discerning about three things. First of all, what kind of issue is it? What do you wish to speak about? Are you wanting to engage something that's just the hot topic du jour? Something maybe sensationalist, as we had a couple of Fridays ago. I would suggest to you that the hot topic or the sensationalism is not where our witness belongs. There are important issues, though, where the church's voice could be very helpful, where the church's people can be taught and formed. But how to do it? We all know that people learn and hear in different ways. There are public forums that the church holds, adult Christian education, youth group discussions. There are ways to teach and talk about this, whatever this is. Writing articles, casual conversation. There are many ways to engage important issues and let yourself be heard for what you believe. But that leads to the third area of discernment. Once you've decided what's important to preach about or to teach about or to write about, it's important to know what the gospel value at stake is. What is it that is offending God's gift of community? What is it that is opposing reconciliation? What is it that seeks to make a liar out of the Lord of life? Know very clearly what it is that you feel is at stake. And then there are issues that do, in fact, I would argue, belong in the pulpit. Duncan preached from the pulpit about racial relations, about James Meredith's enrollment at Ole Miss, about segregation, about voting rights, about states' rights, code language, you know. He put it in the pulpit. I would say that I quite understand the reluctance for the leadership of the church, whether ordained or lay, to go there. I understand that, and we must do so carefully, certainly. But what belongs in the pulpit is the discernment that some issues define an entire era. Many of us lived in that era of the struggle, the civil rights struggle through the 60s, which actually began in the 50s, not before, but Emmett Till, part of it as well. If anything defined an era in the United States, it was the 1960s and its unrest. That belongs in the pulpit, in my view. But it's not to confront people, it's to engage them. It is to model how civil discourse can be done. If we're going to model it in the world, we have to know it among each other in our congregations. Duncan engaged people with what I will call the art and the grace of engaging one another, of reaching out, seeking to understand each other, articulating common values, values that people from different belief systems can in fact embrace together. Finding those things is every bit as important as witnessing to the gospel value that is at stake. Finding the things that can be embraced even from different belief systems and seeking to understand one another in that. Duncan spent almost all of his episcopacy trying to engage members of the Ku Klux Klan, and especially a man named Sam Bowers, who was the Grand Wizard or whatever they called him. A man named Sam Bowers, who was his arch nemesis. Well, Duncan Gray, Bishop Gray, was a nemesis to Sam Bowers, and Sam Bowers wanted to have nothing to do with it. But through the agency of a mutual friend, many of you know of that man named Will Campbell, Duncan and Sam Bowers were able to sit down and talk to one another about the last 30 years of our lives. He sought to understand him, and he sought to be understood. We can do that. We should do that. Being able to connect with different points of view is in the Anglican DNA. I would argue that there is not a Christian tradition better equipped from its historic formation over hundreds of years, even thousands of years, than our tradition as Anglicans to engage disagreement gracefully and with understanding and respect. It's in our DNA. It's a world, it's a charism that we have that the world desperately needs. And I think, given our society now more than ever, they need to see, and they'll know it when they see it, and we can do it. So, preach it, write it, teach it. change the tone. Just the tone. Bring some content. Something that we can engage that is an actual idea. And do so out of your own authenticity, your own integrity, your own commitment to Jesus. In the old state capitol in Jackson, Mississippi, the building that was first used as the state capitol, there are lots of paintings of Mississippi's greatest heroes, greatest figures from all fields of endeavor, paintings of William Faulkner and Eudora Welty and William Eggleston and Willie Morris and Muddy Waters, Robert Johnson, and Duncan Montgomery Gray. A life-size portrait in his purple cassock, because he's not just a hero for the church. He's a hero for our country. Have a hero. God, I'm blessed by mine. The church has heroes. They're called saints. God helping, I mean to be one too, but God knows I need one or two. I hope you get a chance to see that picture hanging in Mississippi, because it's very much at home.